My name is Denny Stoddard. We've been coming here since December, I guess. And thank you, Rick. That was much too kind of an intro. Let's see. So I was born in 1953 to a single mother. And I point that out because in 1953, that was really not widely accepted. And my biological dad just took off. I have no idea who he is, never wanted to know, never cared. He abandoned me and my mother. In my eyes, it's his loss. My mother grew up semi-Catholic. My dad was Protestant, but not quite sure what that ever meant, but that was on his dog tags in the military. So we grew up kind of going to catechism once in a while, going to church once in a while, mostly Christmas and Easter, times like that. So I did learn a little bit about who God was and a little bit about who Jesus was, because that's how Christian people do, is they talk about God and they talk about Jesus. But at that age, I didn't really go enough to be really concerned. My life really started going south around 14. We were living in Huber Heights. Now you got to remember, this is like the late 60s, so there was not the technology that there is right now. Started hanging out with the wrong kind of people. Stole cars for fun because we could. thanks, Eric. Well, let's say you got to look at the time. It was the late 60s. There was not a lot of technology. You could put a car in neutral, roll it. This is assuming that people left the keys in it, which they did. You could roll it down the street, start it up, drive around. We just did that for fun because that's what we did. We were young and we were stupid. I had another friend, and I'm going to tell you his name. It's going to be important later. His name was Alan, and his mom and dad were divorced. His dad lived in Huber with us. His mom lived over in Parkside Homes, which was a project in Dayton. Which was where my life really started going bad, because at 14, I learned how to drink beer, smoke pot, and have sex, all in one wonderful weekend. The problem was, I liked it. I did. I mean, I can't lie, right? You know, so it was easy to do that stuff. The people that I hung around with over there, they accepted me, because going to school, I never was really a jock. I tried out for stuff. I was never good enough at sports. I didn't really care a ton about it. But when you get in with those kind of people, and I hope I'm not offending anybody, they didn't readily accept me for who I was. This other group of people, however, they shared their beer, they shared their cigarettes, their pot, they shared their cars. I learned how to work on cars. I learned how to drive a car at 14 years old. I felt accepted by these people. So at the same time, I was hanging around in Huber with another group of people who were just as good, and I lived at home, but I was hanging out at a house with a lot of underage kids that the lady that lived at the house let us drink, let us smoke, and that obviously leads to underage sex, that leads to stealing because a lot of kids were there. So we had to eat, so we would just go into someone's garage, open the freezer, refrigerator, and take food. Because again, that was the late 60s, early 70s, people were trusting. And unfortunately, and then I was, say, in the 10th grade. Well, we had Christmas break. They still called it Christmas break back then. We broke for Christmas break. In January, I just forgot to go back to school because I didn't really like it anyway. That was the 1st of January. By the end of January, I got a draft notice because the Vietnam War was still going on. So I was on a delayed enlistment until I went in July. But in the meantime, this girl that was at the house where we lived at was pregnant, and so I thought, well, we should really get married, even though she was pregnant and it was not my child. So we got married. I went to boot camp, and because I thought by going into the military, I could move away and things would change. And I could become a new person, and everybody's shaking their head. Yeah, no one's ever done that, right? So I get to South Carolina. My wife comes down. The first thing we do is move into an apartment complex, and guess what? People are smoking, people are drinking, and feel right at home. So obviously, I am not running away from my problems. The problems continue. That friend of mine I named earlier, Alan, he joined the military, and he got stationed with me in Charleston, which was really fun. My best friend from school and me were hanging out together now in the military, having all kinds of fun. And I deployed to overseas. I can't remember. But when I was in the military, we did a lot. They were winding down the war. And it takes a lot to stop a war machine. You just don't turn the switch and everybody shakes hands and goes home. We were flying tons of equipment over and flying a lot of things back, including a lot of caskets. Hundreds and hundreds and thousands of caskets of American soldiers. And that weighed heavily on me, sitting on an airplane from Germany back to Charleston or Dover, Delaware, looking at caskets. So my friend Alan is in South Carolina. I think I'm in Turkey, actually. So we're doing this Turkey, Spain, Germany thing run. And I come back, and my wife is acting kind of really weird. So I talk, and I find out they're having an affair. Great. My best friend and my wife. So he changes outfits and gets an early out. He comes back to Ohio. She comes back to Ohio because we have two kids by then. So I'm left in Charleston. I'm single. I'm hurt. I'm upset. And I start drinking again. And now that I'm legal, I have no boundaries, basically. So I start smoking. We start doing, there was all kinds of stuff back then. There was LSD 25 going around. There was blotter acid, orange sunshine, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Quaaludes. And I'm working in an outfit, and I'm in the military, so we're going back and forth overseas. So maybe a lot of people don't know this, but military people have like the best access to bringing drugs back into the country, because we're on the planes, we are crew members, and we land the planes, we get off, and there's nobody searching us because we're crew members. So we can literally bring back everything. Hashish was huge. Couldn't bring enough of that back to sell it. And all this was while I was in the military. I get discharged and go to work for the military at the shipyard for the Navy, where I meet a black gentleman who gives me some pot. And I'm like, okay, this is good. And he says, do you think you can sell this? And I'm like, no, to who? He goes, your friends. And I said, well, let's try it. So he gives me a couple pounds of pot, and I start selling it. And it doesn't take me long to figure out that, A, he just wants to get into the white neighborhood to make money, which is fine because I'm making money. At this point, to me, selling drugs just becomes an entrepreneurial journey for me, something new, something different. I'm working, but I'm selling drugs. And I also realize that I can smoke for free. I learned the ins and outs of selling, and I was very honest. I mean, you know, back in the day, we had nickel, dime, and quarter bags, and they were, I weighed them right out. I was honest. As drug dealers go, I suppose. So we develop a pretty good friendship, and then I start selling cocaine for him. And cocaine was just becoming to the point where it wasn't for the elite anymore, it was for the masses now. So it was real easy to sell. Again, the Quaaludes were easy to sell. The acid was easy to sell. Man, I can't tell you the times that I got pulled over, because I am a car guy, so I've always had nice cars, loud cars. You can notice me because I wanted that, because I was a car guy. But if you open the trunk, I had 5 or 6 pounds, like, ready to sell, bagged up. I mean, if that's not distributing. And looking back, it's again, it's like I heard this, I don't know, every Friday night since I've been here. By the grace of God, nobody ever looked in my trunk. I mean, that was like a new thing back then. Drug dealing, apparently. Cops were not, like, searching every single vehicle for drugs. And so I felt lucky or skilled. Again, and selling all these drugs, I got to do a ton of it for free, so it was easy to do it for free. I don't consider myself an addict. I, you know, never had a drinking problem because I could do it just fine. I always went to work. I'll be the first one to admit there was a lot of days I should not have been at work, but I always went. And so this whole time I'm in South Carolina, in Charleston, the drug use just gets more, the alcohol, that's like basically all I do. And go to work, and I'm working on cars. And so I know that's real safe. People's lives are in my hands, and that's all I'm doing. So I meet a gal, and we get married. And when I met her, she didn't use anything. She did because of me. I got her brother into selling drugs, and he was really good at selling drugs. He knew a ton of people. And to this day, I look back and I'm like, where's all that money that I was making? It's like, I made good money selling drugs, but I spent good money. I wasted money, and I wasted my life with that stuff. I realize that now. So I'm in South Carolina. The economy starts going south. So I decide, hey, I've been away from home for a long time. I'll pack up my new wife, and we'll move back to Ohio. Again, with the premise of I'm going to move away. I'm going to change my location. I'm going to change my environment. And I can leave all this behind me. So we moved back to Ohio. She has never left Charleston in her life. The marriage doesn't last very long because she's homesick. She wants to move back home. I don't want to move back to South Carolina. I enjoy being at home. So we had a very amicable split. But now I'm single again. And so after work one day, what do you do? Someone says, let's go have a beer. All right, I'm Johnny Goodtime. I'm up for a drink. Well, then, hey, do you smoke? Well, sure. Well, let's do some weed. Okay, let's do some weed. Okay, the next thing you know, weeks, months go by. Hey, you got some friends. Do you think you can sell? Well, yes, I'm pretty good at that, obviously. So now I'm back in Ohio, and it's the same thing all over again. You go to work, you go home, you start drinking, you start smoking, and at probably several years into doing this, again, I come so close to getting busted so many times that you get kind of lazy with it, and you take it for granted. And so I'm selling drugs still, and everybody is in my life has to do with either cars, sex, or drugs. And at one point, I actually remember thinking that I have it made. This is what it's all about. And I was really quite content. And I wake up one morning to police cars surrounding my apartment. And they want me, and I don't know it. But this girl that I had taken out twice, who I gave drugs to twice, was in rehab. Well, she didn't tell me, but her parents figured it out. She gave me up, obviously. And again, God is in my life, and I have no idea, because these cops are doing a sting. They have no idea who I am, but they do now, and they are quick to let me know this. And I'm like, okay. And they actually tell me if I like desist and desist what I'm doing, then they would, if I get busted in this sting operation, that they can consider this. And I'm like, okay. So I quit selling drugs, and then I met my next wife, and I really can't tell you why we got married, because we were both drinking, because we were both doing drugs. I had since quit selling, but again, that's all we did. And anybody that's been... When you have a couple living together and there's drugs and alcohol involved, it's never usually a smooth relationship. It's usually volatile. So what do you do when you're dating and you have a volatile relationship? You get engaged. Because you figure when you're engaged, it's all going to change. But it stays volatile. But you figure with this deluded mind that, well, if we get married, then everything will be fine. And it's not. And so that marriage falls apart. And at that point, I'm just like ready to give up on life. I am at my rock bottom. Absolutely nothing is going right. I'm losing my house. I have this drug habit. I have this drinking problem. I can't fix cars right. People complain about it. And I get to the point where depression sets in. And I don't know if I really thought about killing myself. I can honestly sit here and say I thought about killing somebody else. Probably mainly because I could, as far as I was concerned. But again, God steps into my life without me knowing it. An older gentleman that I worked with actually sat me down and tells me, I've been watching you on this downhill spiral. And he goes, I think you're at rock bottom. And I said, I believe I am. And he said, you know, one of the great things about being at rock bottom, son, is it's a perfect foundation to build your life back up. And I said, okay, great, thank you, I appreciate it. I didn't quite understood what he meant at that time. But it was good advice. It was better advice than I was getting from anybody else. And so I continue doing what I'm doing, and God shows up in my life again. And remember, all this time, I don't even know it, okay? I just am totally oblivious to what God is doing in my life. I'm working at Key Chrysler right here in Xenia, Ohio. And I'm working on the night shift, and this gorgeous young lady comes to work in the office. And so it is. It's actually Brenda. I just, you know, so I put on my Don Juan thing, you know, and I sashay up there and our first date was, hey, do you want to go see the band tonight? Because a bunch of guys I work with played in a country band out in Huber somewhere. And she goes, okay. And then everybody said, did he tell you about his car? And she goes, why, no. I had sideswiped something at some point, and the door didn't open, the right door didn't open. So the only way in and out was through me. But she was either brave, stupid, or just like incompetent of what they were telling her, because she agreed to go. Yeah, she did. So we get there, and I'm like to play pool, so I put my quarters up to play pool, and they're like, your money's up next, we're playing partners. So I can't find a partner, so Brenda decides to be my partner, right? She's not a pool shark, I'm not a pool shark, but we play a round of pool, and we win. And so what do you do when you're playing pool with a female partner and you win? You got to give her a kiss, right? And that was a very expensive kiss. yes, it was. But it was probably, I think, the kiss that saved my life, to be honest with you. Again, God's working in my life, okay? This guy had just told me months ago, being at the rock bottom is a perfect place to build back up. Because at that time, at that point in my life, I was totally disgusted with the lifestyle I was living. But I didn't quite know how to change it. I was going through this horrible divorce, which is the person I wanted to kill, actually. And, I mean, not only did I think about it, I acted on it a time or two. It was a horrible, I mean, we got into fist fights and the police were there regularly, and I was arrested on domestic violence charges. And again, this is God working in my life, because when they typed up the paperwork, they said that I chalked her. I know, and a lot of you guys have been there, and it's like, it's just like a small thing like that, and the prosecutor's like, how am I going to prosecute this? How do you chalk somebody? It's like, this is ridiculous. And, you know, so again, God's hand is in there, and he lets me, they drop all the charges. To my delight, obviously. But at this time, this is when I met Brenda. I'm going through this horrible divorce. Now, my ex-wife blames her for breaking us up, but I didn't even know her then, but it was okay. I let it roll. So I met Brenda, and the few of you that know her, she was not the little elegant, quaint lady she is now. We met, and so we hung out, and we were partying, and we had a lot of good times together, and we were married for 5 years before we had our daughter Courtney. And people kept asking why, and I kept saying it because it's really fun to practice, you know. And so it was, but I think we were testing it to make sure it would last. I mean, I was married 3 times before. She was kind of leery of that. I don't blame her, you know. I guess I did pray throughout my life. But unfortunately, it was when my face was in the toilet or I was puking up my guts and sick. I couldn't even get up off the ground. You know, everybody goes through that, you know. Oh, God, if you get me out of this, I'm going to do all this ridiculous, crazy stuff. And you never do. But then again, I guess that's really not praying either. But that would be the only time that I would put myself before God and in that deluded kind of way. So me and Brenda meet. We're 5 years into our marriage. We have Courtney, our daughter, my third child. And things are going relatively well. And is this where you want to chime in?
I'll give you a real short version of my testimony before I met Denny. I was born and raised in Jamestown and to a really good family. My dad was raised strict Catholic and very strict Catholic. My mother was Methodist, and she's the one that took us to church. And but I never was taught what Jesus was and what he could do in your life and how he was our Savior. We moved to Virginia when I was 11. And our whole family was here, but when we moved down there, we were there for 5 years. And in that space of time, at the age of 12, I started smoking pot. I started smoking cigarettes. I drank, and I was still the good little girl at home. My parents never knew. My mother would have been mortified. So we moved back here, and I was my sophomore year of high school, and I didn't fit in because once you're out of the school system, you come back, you don't know anybody. It's a hard age. And then I easily hooked up to people who already had the pot, so I slid right into that. So I smoked pot, I drank. Graduated high school. I moved out as soon as I was 18. Then I was introduced to Quaaludes, speed, LSD. You know, I never really did the LSD, though. I would go flush it in the toilet. You know, but I wanted to fit in, so I acted like I took it. But I remember taking speed to stay up and Quaaludes to get down and alcohol in between. Just doing the wrong things. And so I wanted to get out of that life. I worked second shift for a long time and thought the night crowd was the problem, not me. And so I thought, well, you know, I'm going to... Yeah, I was going to go work on day shift and go back to school. So I started at Taco Bell, of all places, but it was a day job, and it was a job, and I was going to go to Wright State at night. Got a phone call about a job at Key Chrysler, and it was second shift, and I'm like, well, I don't want to work second shift. It's a bad crowd. I don't want to, you know, want to try to straighten up my life, and this girl kept calling me. She called me, call me. She said, you'd be perfect for the job. I'm like, fine, I'll go interview for the job. I didn't want the job. I got the job. It was good money, so I took the job. And that's where I met Denny. In fact, the lady that did it, her name was Regina, and we sent her a dozen roses the day we got married because she was an instrument of God's grace in our life that I would have never taken that job if she'd not nagged me to death. But God knew in his sovereignty that we were to be together. And so I met Denny, and we continued the partying together for a while. And then we lived together for a year and broke my dad's heart because I wasn't raised that way, but I wanted to test driving for a year. I know that sounds weird, but he'd been married 3 times before. There's something wrong with this guy. So, yeah, and there still is. There still is, but there's God's grace. So, we were in love. We were in love. And so we got married, and we had a quaint little wedding. And so my dad hated him when I lived with him, hated him. He liked him when we started dating. When I moved in with him, he hated him. Got married, loved him. Greatest guy in the world.
I don't get it.
So, but we were married for a while, and we had Courtney. And we still didn't know the Lord, and we still partied some when we had our child. And not as bad, but still it's wrong.
Which and is probably some of the reasons she is like she is.
No.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah, well, that was when cocaine hit the scene, and I loved cocaine. And so we got cleaned off of that, and then we had our daughter, and she was the best blessing. And in retrospect, I think if I had known the Lord, would I have appreciated it so much more, his creation, his gift of life to us as parents, and the responsibility that we have to raise her in him. But I don't regret, because he chooses. He sought me out when he did, and it was in his timing. And so Courtney was 3 when we took her. We moved back to Jamestown. We went back to my home church, which was a Methodist church, and she went to VBS. Mm-hmm. And we'd drop her off and come home, and we'd go, hi. And so she wanted to go to Sunday school, so Denny started taking her to Sunday school.
Because you were working retail.
I was working retail at nights. And then he got invited to Sunday school, and so he started going to Sunday school. He had his first Sunday school teacher. How old were you?
10. I would take Courtney to Sunday school. Now, and you got to get a visual. I still had, like, really long hair, earring. I had a beard. I look like your quintessential biker, basically. So I would take her there. I'd go home. I'd come back. So one day this nicely dressed gentleman, because we were at church, he goes, why don't you come down to the Sunday school class? And so I turned around, because obviously he's not talking to me, you know, but he was. And he was the superintendent of the Greenview school system, which I didn't know at the time. So the next week, you know, we repeat the thing. I walk her over. I go home. I come back. And another guy says, hey, why don't you come to our Sunday school class? And again, I'm like, me? And he's like, yes. And I'm like, no, thank you. His name was Jerry Irwin. And he was, at the time, the sheriff of Greene County. Not a deputy. The sheriff. And I didn't know that either. And so I was probably, 38 then or so? But they finally, like, broke me down. So I'm like, whatever, just shut up and we'll go to Sunday school class, right? So we go in, and now, mind you, it's in, like, a regular little kid's class. So it's, like, 12 by 12 foot around? Everybody's sitting in this circle, and they're a bunch of old Methodist people. Nothing against Methodist people or old people. But they were, like, all dressed nicely, and the only available chair was next to the teacher. And it was like walking down a runway in front of all these people, because I felt they were judging me because of the way I looked. Absolutely. I'm in jeans and a T-shirt and long hair, and they're all dressed up nice. They're churchy folk. you know? And so, I mean, I'm kind of embarrassed, a little humiliated, but I go sit down, and like I said, I'm about 38 years old, and the Sunday school teacher turned to me, and she goes, "We're welcome, and we're glad to have you here." And I'm thinking, yeah, right. And I'll never forget, they were teaching in Matthew maybe about heaping coals on your enemies' heads. Of course, I had no idea what that meant. But anyway, so I'm 38 years old, my very first Sunday school teacher, who I end up loving to death. We're going to go Sunday. They're celebrating their 50th anniversary together. Awesome folks. They became very, very instrumental in our life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were great mentors to us. But I actually got saved before Denny. We weren't saved, and we went to the Methodist Church for a while. And I would watch Charles Stanley. I don't know if you all know who Charles Stanley is, but he's a great preacher. I would watch him faithfully every Saturday night, and Denny and I would watch it faithfully every Saturday night, and then we'd go to church on Sunday morning, but I still didn't know Christ. And so I remember one night distinctly he was preaching on salvation, and I went into my bedroom and to the mantle, and I just said, "God, I need you in my life. I'm still not walking right. I have no peace in my heart." And I just asked Jesus into my heart, and I got saved. And I was 33 years old. And I knew the difference. He sought me out, and I knew the difference. I felt the difference in my heart. And Denny wasn't saved yet, and he didn't get saved for a while. So about a year later, but I quit smoking. I quit drinking. I started listening to the Word, you know, through him. I was reading my Bible, actually listening in church, you know, getting more active. And then Denny got saved about a year later. He told me, "You were laying in bed one night."
It was very, very uneventful. I just was going through the stuff that we'd been learning and been taught, and it just kind of like, man, you know, if this heaven thing is real and Jesus is real and God is real, it's like, this is like so much better than anything I've ever had in my life. Because what I've been doing so far, you know, that old saying, you know, well, how's that working for me? And so it was just like this realization that, man, you know, the worst and the last seat in heaven's got to be better than the best and the first seat in hell. Mm-hmm. I don't want that. So it was just very, very simple. I'm like, I'm giving in. I'm doing this thing. So we both become, now I'm saved. We're living sort of a good life. We have ups and downs. I mean, it's not a bed of roses after you get saved and you start walking with Christ. Things happen. 1999.
I got very ill. My mother came down with breast cancer. It was stage 4 in 98. And I took care of her. My aunt and I tag-teamed her. I would come home from work. I would cook a meal. I would pack his lunch. He would take care of Courtney. I would go down to my mom's. I would spend the whole evening taking care of my mother and my dad as well. And then, you know, we get them settled, and I come home and start the thing all over again. And it wore me down to where I got so ill that I was hospitalized. And I was hospitalized twice for over a week each time. And I had a lung problem they could not figure out. And it was an infection. And I was on my 10th antibiotic the second time I was in the hospital. And it was the first time I had a really true spiritual connectivity to the Lord physically. If that's the best way to explain it, I'm not sure. But the doctor told me, he goes, "I'm throwing this last one at you. I don't know what else to throw at you." He goes, "I don't know that you're going to make it." And our daughter was 5 at the time. And we were praying, and I remember I couldn't breathe. I just couldn't breathe. I couldn't barely speak. I was on oxygen, and it was a struggle. And I remember I woke up in the middle of the night. It was 4 o'clock in the morning, and I looked straight at the clock, and it was 4 o'clock on the dot. And I had woke up from this dream, and it was my whole Sunday school praying for me, and it was a vision. And This one man named Dave, I felt his arms go around me and him pray over me. It was the oddest thing. But when I woke up, I could breathe. I could breathe. I could talk. I just felt like nothing was wrong with me. And I knew that it was God. And the next morning, my Sunday school teacher came and told to talk to me and pray with me. And I told her about my dream. And she said, you know, I called him last night to pray for you. And he was so shaken up over you being sick. And that was only of God. Only God can do something like that. So I ended up getting better, but it took 4 months of recovery. But through that, our marriage, God walked us through that whole thing. And I eventually healed. My mom still fought cancer for years. And then Denny went through that alone as a husband.
I did. And as a husband, at that point in my life, I was a believer, and I was just becoming a strong believer, but I didn't understand why God would do this. And I would drive out 675 every day, and I would see that United Healthcare Medical Building. And
tell them why you were angry with them. They wanted to get me out of the
hospital. The insurance would just like get her out of the, just get, we're sick and tired of paying for her. We don't know what's wrong with her. Just send her home. Like an animal, you know? And so I totally understood at that time why and the mentality of how someone could take weapons, go into a building, and shoot people. Because for a slight moment, driving by that building, I'm like, I didn't want to do it, but I totally understood how someone could get to that point in their life. Because I had every opportunity. I had weapons. There's the building. I could do this thing. But, I mean, that's one of the very first times that I had to, like, seriously seek God. And it's like, man, you know, you have got to walk me through this and back me out of this, because if anything happens to her, I'm going postal. You know, I mean, and I don't want to do that. I need to be reeled in by you, by your spirit, by your grace. And again, because of his grace, he did absolutely that. I didn't do anything I shouldn't have done except continue to pray and continue to seek people that would help me stay on this side of the prison bars.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the next thing is Courtney.
Then we got stronger in our walk, and you will, and you do, and you grow, and God brings you trials, and you learn to lay them at his feet, and that's not easy to do, especially when it comes to your children. We had one child, and at the age of 11, I got on my knees in her room, and I gave her completely to God because I knew that she was God's child, not mine. And at one point in parenting, I realized that I love the creation more than the creator. And that's easy to do, and you have to be very careful with that. God, our children are a gift from God, and so are our spouses. It's a gift from the Lord, but he ultimately owns them. And so we can't put anything before Christ, you know. And so we gave her to him, and then all heck broke loose after that. And the enemy just really tried to come into our home. And you realize, too, that your children have their own walk, and they're their life choices, and they can choose to follow Christ or not. So we did the best we could. And at one point, our daughter, she didn't want her driver's license at all, and she was getting ready to graduate high school, so we thought. And oh yeah, we put her in juvenile detention twice because Courtney was very violent. Well, we pressed charges on our daughter. Do you know how hard that is? To press charges on your child, but we knew it was the right thing to do, that God would have us to do this, because she broke the law, and you need to obey the law of the land. Courtney had a really bad temper, and I was her target. She would like to attack me, And I am gentle in spirit to a certain extent until you make me very angry. But she was my kid, and I wasn't going to hit my kid. I'll spank my kid, but I'm not going to hit her. So ended up, she would be violent in our home. So we called the police on her, and we pressed charges, and she was in juvenile detention twice. It was a good parenting decision because she was disobeying and breaking the law, basically. And then she came, and that's hard to do, but God convicted us we were doing the right thing. And so she was getting ready to graduate high school, and she barely made it, but she graduated. She got a got her license, a car, and graduated all within 2 weeks, and then she moved out. And she was in a relationship, and I won't tell a lot about it because it's her story to tell, but it was in a relationship that we were not approving of, and it wasn't healthy. And she moved out for a year, and then she came back.
And again, this is where Mr. Denny really wanted to hurt somebody.
You have to learn that with, it was not easy for a dad to watch his daughter go through a relationship like that. She decided to come home, and we accepted her home, but she had to pay rent. You know, she had to abide by the rules. She was willing to do that, and then she found out she was going to have a baby. And that was tough. It's not what I wanted for her. But God doesn't create life by accident.
That's right.
And so.
But that was tough.
Yeah.
That was tough knowing that our daughter was pregnant by somebody that we did not approve of. As a parent, that was very, very tough.
And in the meantime, my mother was dying. And my father was terminally ill. And it was a rough season. But I remember during that whole time just being on my knees and praying to God and knowing that this was his sovereignty in our life and that all we needed to do was obey. Obey and serve him. And we did that. And it's not always easy.
Yeah. We don't. Through all these trials, the one with Courtney the first time, the thing I learned is I don't have to always know the answers because I'm one of those kind of people. I want to know why. God just taught me you don't have to know. You just have to be obedient.
Yeah.
That was huge.
So she came home and she went to night school and I watched the baby while she was in school. That was the rule. She had, you know, she had to find a sitter every other time. She carried a part-time job. She went to school. She finished her education. Had her baby. She moved out. In the meantime, both of my parents went home to be with the Lord. I should back up about 2 years. I led my dad to Christ. And that's one of the hugest blessings in my life. He felt that he'd sinned too much to go to heaven. And he was terminally ill. He was in ICU, and I read the whole book of John to him that night. I laid hands on him. I wept over him. I prayed over him, and that was all God. That was not me, and I read that whole book of John. I couldn't talk the next morning. He pulled through that, and 2 weeks after that, he said, I want to talk to you about Jesus, and so the Holy Spirit was working on him in that hospital bed, and I led my dad to Christ, and he was 71 years old. And I can't thank God enough for that. Gotta wrap it up. So anyhow, Courtney is married now, got two other children, doing well, following the Lord. And we went through the cancer journey with Denny. And Denny got cancer 3 years ago. And he,
just when you think things are going smooth in your life.
He had a mass that popped up on his neck one morning. He just had this lump. And I said, what's in your neck? He goes, I don't know. And there was a lump. So over some tests and things, everything came back benign, but the surgeon still did surgery. And he ended up having stage 4 cancer. And they did a complete neck dissection on him. And they found out the cancer originated in his tonsil. And so they took out everything here, all the lymph nodes and saliva glands, and they couldn't keep digging at his tonsil because it would have compromised his vocal cords and his esophagus. So they had to leave the cancer in. And so he had 33 radiation treatments and one chemo a week. And it was brutal. But God saw us through that too. And I know we have to wrap it up, but I got to tell my Peaches story. And he had brought him home. We brought him home, and I knew he wasn't going to be able to eat soon because they said he wouldn't even be able to drink water. And so I wanted to try to fatten him up because there's nothing to him to begin with. So he loves peach pie, and this was July 2nd, July 3rd. And I said, you know, Lord, I'd love to have some fresh peaches for Denny so I can make him a pie. And I didn't want to leave him. And I said, you know, I said, but that's okay. You know, I might have some frozen ones back there. That's not what I want, but I'll use them. Well, then there was a knock on my door, and I went to open the door. And there's a lady there, and we've known her all her life. Her name was Rhea. She goes, hey, Brenda. She goes, God put Denny on my heart this morning. She goes, here's a bag of peaches. I kid you not. And I was like,
she gets it, yeah.
Yep. And I looked at her, and I'm like, you're kidding. She goes, I don't bake, and you make a mean pie. She goes, and I thought you'd want to make Denny a peach pie. And I go, you're kidding me. And so I told her that. So God's going to care for a bag of peaches in your life. In my life, he's going to take care of the rest of it, you know. And he brought us out of so much junk and garbage in our life. And he knew we were going to be together before we even knew we were going to be together. But don't lose the faith. Keep walking and keep fighting the good fight, just like Scripture says, because God's got your back.
Because remember, we fight from victory, not for
That's
victory.
Right. So
the cross is the victory. We're just fighting from it, man.